Okay, welcome everybody. I want to provide notice. This meeting is recorded and a Google transcription of the meeting is collected as well. The audio of the recording is posted to the ADUA website. The Google transcription of the meeting is used for written meeting minutes. You're good to go, Linda.
Thank you, Michelle. I hereby call to order this regular meeting of the DES-DDD District Central Independent Oversight Committee. Today's date is January 22nd, 2024, and the time is 10:03. This is a regular meeting of the Independent Oversight Committee. It is being held electronically. It is being recorded, as Michelle said, and the transcript of that recording will be posted on the ADOA IOC website. In an effort to avoid excess background noise and potential microphone feedback, please mute your microphone when you are not speaking. The host of the meeting can mute you, but then you are able to unmute yourself when you would like to speak. You can mute yourself by clicking on the microphone icon at the bottom left corner of your screen or elsewhere depending on the format. Additionally, I've been asked to read the following statement. Do we have anyone that has to disclose a conflict of interest? And if there is, the committee member needs to disclose why. Excuse me. All right, we'll now have introductions of those in the meeting. My name is Linda Meekham. I am currently serving as the chair of this committee. Michelle, if you don't mind.
Certainly. Eva?
Eva Hammond, IOC member.
Lisa?
Lisa Ellenberger, IOC member.
Debbie?
Debbie Stapley, IOC vice chair.
Leah?
Good morning. I'm Leah Gibbs, administrator of the Office of Individual and Family Affairs.
Anne?
My name is Anne Klein, and I work for the University of New Hampshire Institute on Disability, and I'm here on a project that we're doing in Arizona with Access.
Thank you. James?
James Mayo, Quality Assurance Manager for District Central.
Patricia?
Patricia Sandino, PRC Chair, District Central.
Richard?
Hi, good morning. Richard Kalps with the Office of Individual and Family Affairs Volunteer Coordinator.
Mickey?
Good morning. I'm Mickey Barnhart, also with the Office of Individual and Family Affairs as a Volunteer Coordinator.
Joan?
Good morning, Joan McQuaid, Office of Individual and Family Affairs.
Morgan?
Good morning, Morgan O'Hara, DDD IOC Liaison.
Larry?
Good morning, Larry Allen with Arizona Department of Administration, the IOC State Liaison.
Frederica?
Good morning, this is Frederica Graham with Access.
Ian?
Good morning, Ian Wilson here, United Healthcare Community Plan. I'm a member advocate.
Vera?
Vera Kravarchuk, Mercy Care Ombudsman.
My name is Michelle Rademacher. I'm the DDD IOC liaison. And we also have Dee.
Hi, I'm Dee Friedman. I'm the chair for the DDD District West IOC, and I'm here as a member of the public because you have some great presentations today, I'm told.
Thank you. Did I miss anybody?
Thank you, Michelle. So we don't have anyone from the public. So I don't need to do a vote, a call to the public then, correct? All right. Before we get started in our on our agenda, I have attended District West meetings several times. They have extended to me the courtesy of allowing me to speak during their meeting and during the discussion. And I would like to extend D that same invitation to speak during our meeting. She would have that opportunity to do so. The only thing she could not do is vote. But could we have a motion from our committee members to allow D to speak if we're in favor of that?
Eva makes a motion to allow Deidre Friedman to speak at during our ILC.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Lisa seconds it.
Thank you, Lisa. Let's have a vote on that. Eva?
Yes.
Lisa?
Yes.
Debbie? Debbie, say yes.
Yes.
Thank you. And I say yes. Thank you. Okay, Dee, you're on.
Thank you.
You bet. We appreciate you being here, as well as everyone else. Thank you so much. So the first thing we're going to do is I'm going to allow Eva to do a little introduction for Anne and explain. She and I had a meeting with Anne, and it's excellent, and we've invited her to come today. So go ahead, Eva.
Okay. As Anne introduced herself, she is the Director of Outcomes and Evaluation for the National Center for START Services, who got a grant from Access. And part of that grant is the aim is to evaluate what is in place for people with IDD mental health. And the second aim was to learn how service systems can improve. A lot of you may have received the survey from different groups. And so she's running a survey, discussion groups, family care interviews. And so I thought maybe as disability advocacy, we could give our input as a group, since I know a lot of us don't have members in the mental health, but we do deal with mental health issues for people with IDD. Anne, you're on.
Thank you so much. So as Eva said, the National Center for START Services out of the Institute on Disability has a current contract with Access in Arizona. And what Access has specifically asked us to do is to look at mental health and crisis services for people with IDD in Arizona. And the reason they've asked us to do this is probably kind of familiar to all of you, is that folks who have these really complex needs in both systems sometimes struggle, which system do they belong in primarily? Where do they get their primary services? How are those services kind of commingled? What's the collaboration look like? It can be a very complex kind of system. And then the second major reason is that people who have these very complex needs are often the folks in the IDD system that end up using emergency services. So if you think of the folks that you're advocating for who might be in emergency departments, might be struggling to find placement, might be in a psychiatric admission, or maybe have frequent law enforcement involvement. So kind of the folks where, you know, the police sometimes get called. And so what we're doing, as Eva said, is we're collecting data across the state of Arizona on what's working well in the system for this particular group of folks and where there's gaps in the system. where there's things that need to be improved. And we're collecting data in a whole bunch of ways. We have a large scale community survey that really asks about general access to services, access to community services, IDD services, mental health services, crisis services. It's very broad. We're also doing discussion groups with various sort of partners in the community, which is what we're doing here today. So we've met with, you know, family members, with self-advocates, with providers, both on the mental health and the IDD side, with crisis providers. And we're really interested in hearing from all of you as advocates for folks with IDD. And then the third thing we're doing is a series of family caregiver interviews. And these are with family members specifically about their experiences with the mental health system or the crisis system. So we're kind of in the last phase of data collection. We're wrapping up at the end of this month. And once we're finished, we're going to put all of those data together, both the quantitative, and then we'll code all of this qualitative data. And then we're going to submit a report with recommendations back to Access. And then sometime in the spring, Access will hold kind of a large scale community meeting where they'll invite all of the stakeholders in the system to kind of come and hear what our findings were and what our recommendations are. So that is kind of what we're doing today. And as Eva said, this is not meant to be a presentation. It's really meant to be a discussion. And again, the focus is really on, as advocates, where do you see concerns about people when they need mental health and crisis services? Where are things working well? That's kind of where I want to start. And I'm not going to take up too much of the meeting because I know you have another presentation and you have your regular meeting, but I'd love to just kind of jump right in and kind of get your sort of first kind of thoughts when you kind of hear IDD and crisis. What are some of the things that stand out to you as either really problematic or working really well for this group of folks? Go ahead, Eva. It's probably easiest if you just jump right in.
So I guess part of, because I read closed IRs on suicides, and it just seems like we get an IR that they have the threaten, they go into behavioral health. And it just seems to me that for us who advocate for people in the DDD system, that they fall in a black hole because we do not find out what happened to them in the behavioral health hospital, other than the fact that they went in or the fact that they came out. And sometimes when they come out, they don't have their med list with them. And when they come out, they don't have a med list, or they're on an NPR, which has been sort of taken care of, you know, with but sometimes that happens. And so I guess my issue is, because of SARS, and we're going to bring this up, is the fact that ASH has to report seclusion and restraints to the quality management and DD, and we don't know if when our members are in behavioral health hospitals, if they report seclusion and restraints to DD's quality management, and one of the other issues is they also don't do Article 9s, because supposedly DD does not pay for people in behavioral health hospitals. So We have a lot of issues that, like I told you, it seems like they fall in the black hole when they go into the behavioral health hospital.
So just to make sure that I'm clear, so the concern is sort of a lack of
the same protections that somebody would have in the IDD system when they're in the behavioral health system?
And communication, even communication between health hospitals and, say, IOCs or DDDQI.
Okay. So supposedly the behavioral health hospitals have QMUs, but their QMUs don't talk to our QMUs, even though the DD policy said that ASH had to report to DDD. So why doesn't the behavioral health hospitals have to report to DDD?
Go ahead, Lisa. I saw you had your hand raised.
Sure. I think in addition to that, which kind of falls along the same line, or maybe separately, but I know that the way that, like, with crisis and mental health teams and mental health and crisis teams, what I see is that they're not all specialists with individuals with developmental disabilities, and oftentimes they interact.
Whoops! Did she freeze or did I?
She did. She's in the Bahamas.
Oh my goodness. Well, hopefully
go ahead.
There she is.
Oh, go ahead, Lisa. You froze for a sec.
Oh, okay. So I'm stating that the mental health and crisis teams are not all specialists when it comes to individuals with developmental disabilities, and oftentimes communicate inappropriately and question inappropriately with them. I think that's a big concern.
Okay.
I know Dee actually has her hand up.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I want to take Lisa's point even further. It's not just the initial questioning, it's the actual treatment. Because if individuals have IDD, especially if they have autism, the medications that are being prescribed and the therapy that's being described may not be the best medication and therapy for individuals with IDD. And that's not just an access problem. That's a systemic problem, whether you're a Medicaid recipient or you have private insurance. And we understand that that's a national problem. It's not just an Arizona problem. The other thing that I'd like to ask you about, I don't know if you're aware, but Disability Rights Arizona, formerly known as the Arizona Disability Law Center, mm-hmm. is contracted with DDD, and they are currently providing oversight for 500 DDD members who are high risk because they either have high risk behaviors or they have a dual behavior health IDD diagnosis. Are you collaborating at all with them? And will you both be looking at your findings to enhance both of your efforts?
So I would like to speak with somebody from Disability Rights, and I don't think I've spoken with somebody from Disability Rights in another meeting forum, but not specifically with their group. So when you say they're providing oversight, what does that look like?
There's a law, there's an actual Arizona statute that came into law in 2019, and I think the contract is being run through DES, DDD, but I can't tell you exactly. But they are.
It is, D.
Somehow they identified 500. We have approximately, what is it, Linda? 25% of our members live in group homes.
Right.
So that's about 12,500. And somehow I do not know the criteria that they used, but they boiled that list down to 500 people who are at high risk because they either have an actual dual diagnosis, behavior health, IDD, or their behaviors are severe enough that they made the list. And over a three-year period, they will actually be monitoring those 500 people. They're going in, they're doing reviews of their PCSPs, their person-centered service plans.
Uh-huh.
I assume they're monitoring the med lists. I would hope that they're monitoring the spending plans, because all of those individuals are SSI members, and as the Protection and Advocacy Agency,
Altex, yeah.
But as the Protection and Advocacy Agency for Arizona, they have a contract with the Social Security Administration, so they're supposed to have oversight over rep payees. So I hope when they're in there, they're serving multifunction, but I can't guarantee it. But they are also doing one-to-one interviews with each of those 500 people and their families. And they're doing it over 3 years.
Okay.
2023 was the first year. They were supposed to review 175 of the 500 people. And I think they said they did 143 interviews.
Wow.
And then 2024, they're expecting to do 195. And then in 2025, they'll finish up. But each year they're required to write a report. And it's supposed to be presented to the legislature. I assume it'll also be presented to the governor's office. But it's a specific Arizona, in response to a specific Arizona law. It's not an Arizona legislative study. It's actually an Arizona law.
It's House Bill 2865.
Dee, I'm going to put my email in the chat. And if you have a contact at Disability Rights that you could put me in contact with, that would be fantastic.
Sure.
Somebody that's involved in that process.
And I'll also, if you'd like, Anne, they're going to be doing a presentation for the District West IOC. They did the presentation for the Arizona Developmental Disabilities Planning Council on Friday. And John Myers gives us a quarterly report now at our statewide IOC chair meeting. And we had that meeting last Tuesday. And so that's how I heard about the presentation. So I attended on Friday.
Okay.
It'll be the same presentation that they're going to do for us. So if you want to attend when that's scheduled, I can let you know if you'd like to know.
That would be fantastic. So let me ask a couple of other questions. So in addition,
if I may just piggyback off of a couple of comments Eva made. So she said NPR. I think you meant PRN meds, right, Eva?
Okay. I figured that.
Okay. I wasn't sure. So I'm like, is that a radio station or what? Anyway, and the problem with PRN meds is in a DDD residential facility, there cannot be PRN meds per Article 9.
Right.
Which brings us to the next issue. And the reason that we're curious if DDD is paying for these services is because Article 9 does not apply to the behavioral health hospitals. But if DDD is paying for them, should Article 9 apply? Which would, and do you know Article 9 here in Arizona? You're aware.
I'm familiar with it, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So it's the rights. So that's the other component that we're looking at as well. So just thought I'd throw that in. Thank you.
Now, let me ask kind of on the opposite side of the spectrum. Are you aware of issues of people with IDD not getting behavioral health or crisis care that they need? So kind of, you know, there's the folks who are getting it and there's not the good collaboration or communication, but are you aware of folks that kind of are not getting that care?
When I do PRC, which is the Program Review Committee and Behavior Treatment Plans, I would just like to know, Patricia's on, so she can, if you don't mind, Patricia, speak up when you have something to offer. But I also wonder if Brent, she texted me and said Brent was going to be on, who's behavior health. Is he on yet? Apparently not. Okay.
No, he's not on.
Okay. All right. That's too bad because he would have been good here too. But, oh, shoot, what were we saying? Oh, PRC. So it seems like sometimes it's not always, they have their quarterly med reviews, but it's hard to get the paperwork from them. And, you know, if we don't have current paperwork, it's hard for the agencies to do what they're supposed to be doing. So it's not smooth sailing, and it's not that they're necessarily having their appointments met, but the communication is not always there with the follow-up paperwork, necessary paperwork and signatures and that sort of thing that DDD does need to have in order for it to be legit.
Well, there are some group homes that have not, sometimes when the DDD member, okay, I can't speak for the non-DD, but for the DD member who have a guardian, sometimes there's an issue between the guardian and the group home about who's going to take them to their med reviews. And recently I've found a couple IRs where people, they were running on behavior plans and they haven't, and they were expired by 2 to 3, 2.5 years. So somewhere along the disconnect, maybe, I don't know if they don't go to the hospital or they don't get their programs approved by PRC. So where the disconnect is, I would not know, but I have seen where behavior plans haven't been being run that are expired and where group homes aren't taking people to their psych appointments, and they, or the other thing is, oh, that was the latest one, was where the parent decided that she was in control of all the meds, and then the group home, because the guardian did not give the meds information to the group home, they were out of compliance with DDE and the monitors. So sometimes it isn't always on the behavior health side, sometimes it's on the guardian side, and sometimes it's on the group home side. Because there is such a, it just, I can't believe how many IRs I read where the group home is out of compliance because they don't have enough staff, or the staff left because
okay. We're getting off right. Okay, yeah. Thank you, Eva.
Okay. So let me ask a kind of, and I probably have this in my notes somehow, but if somebody is on psychiatric meds, is there oversight of that, and who does it?
Yes. Go ahead, Dee. Do you want? Oh. I thought you were going to say something. It's the Program Review Committee and okay. The Independent Oversight Committee through the use of a behavior treatment plan.
Okay.
And those are held annually. And that's what when we say PRC, that's the Program Review Committee, where IOC sits on as a member of that panel. We review the meds, make sure everything is in compliance and generally those plans are approved unless it's something really, really, really egregious, but approved with corrections, and then the corrections are made within 10 days. But IOC, PRC, and behavior health is on PRC, as well as provider representatives. So yes, there is oversight.
So, and the other thing of it is that there is an IR, and so maybe for neglect. So the QMU goes in and they request all these things. And so they, one of the things they always look at is the med logs. And so while they don't say it is a neglect, they can get them for not doing their meds.
You mean that an IR will be submitted for missed meds, etc.?
No,
is that
no,
what you're stating?
Remember, James said that they do it. So if it's an IR, so I
correct.
Have seen in neglect med errors.
So those med errors, Anne, I think is what Eva's saying. Also, the IR are a way for IOC and DDD to monitor oversight as well.
So what I'm saying is the QMU, when they ask, so they don't list it under med reviews because that's Carolyn's thing. But what I'm saying is in another IR, when the QMU comes through, they always look for the med log, making sure it's done. So even though they're looking at something else, they always look at if they're on meds, they always look at their behavior. Do they?
So it's another oversight is what you're trying to say, Eva, correct?
Yeah.
So one of the things that's come up in a couple of places is that sometimes somebody who's having an acute crisis, somebody in the IDD system who's having an acute crisis has some difficulty accessing hospitalization or crisis supports, because there's this sort of idea that maybe it's not a mental health crisis, maybe it's a behavioral crisis, and that, you know, maybe they're not appropriate to be admitted. And, you know, sometimes that might be true, sometimes it's not, but I'm wondering if you have any feedback on that, you know, just kind of the access issue. Will the behavioral health crisis system respond if the person has IDD? Will hospitals admit them if it's appropriate?
I don't know that answer.
Okay.
So part of, you know, like when they have, when I read closed IRs and they have, so they call crises and so if crises doesn't do it. So sometimes, I mean, the biggest problem comes in is they go to the behavioral hospital and they're there for maybe less than 24 hours and then they're back out.
Okay.
And so it's like, what happened in the 24 hours that they were, are they in the emergency room? Were they admitted? You know what I mean? That's where the black hole is, that we don't really find out if they really got any kind of treatment other than the fact that they're back in the group home.
Okay.
So that lack of communication again.
Okay.
I also think one of the big concerns when people go into any of the behavioral health centers is that they believe that stabilization means that they've just been over medicated. And as soon as they go back out to a group home, the group home can't maintain those levels of that medicated status. And so the member goes right back into crisis. So we have a lot of people bouncing back and forth multiple times into the behavioral health because they're just over medicated. They're not really stabilized. They haven't put them on a regular regimen. They haven't gotten all of the issues worked out before they're, you know, back on the street. And I think that our vendors are struggling with that because we have members that are going into behavioral health four and five times in a row, and yet they're still not being stabilized. So that is a huge concern.
Okay. So it's sort of, you go in, you get your drugs, you're calm, you get released, but nothing's solved.
And they use a lot of PRNs in the
right.
system, which they cannot do when they go back out into our community, because we don't allow our vendors to use any type of PRN, psychotropics, or behavioral modifying medications.
Right.
And so they can't just use as needed to keep people, you know, at a stable level. And so I think that a lot of our vendors struggle once they get back out, they come down off of whatever high level meds that they got in the behavioral health center and they can't do anything. They didn't change their medications. They didn't work out a plan of action to help them, you know, moderate the behavior or help the member, you know, with any other type of support. And they're just like medicating them and then treating them again. And it's frustrating.
Great. Thank you.
Dee?
Yeah, I think that, I think James just hit the nail right on the head.
Yeah.
The purpose of the DDD system is medication as a last resort.
Mm-hmm.
And other therapy and interventions as a first resort. We don't see the cooperation between the two systems. I mean, obviously, for some individuals, especially those 500 that I had talked about earlier, who are being monitored, behavior modification is not enough. They need chemical intervention. They need medication in addition to the behavior plans. And there's a disconnect. Every individual who resides in a DDD group home is covered by Medicaid in the state of Arizona. Find me one that isn't, and I'll be completely shocked. So they have health insurance, and they're entitled to behavior health coverage. Plus, the state of Arizona has other funding for individuals who are not covered by Medicaid, especially crisis intervention. So there's no excuse that every one of these individuals shouldn't be getting behavioral health services, and they're not getting them.
Is that a provider issue? There's not enough providers? Is it an issue that providers don't want to support people with IDD because they don't think they'll benefit? Like, what do you see as the barriers to people getting? Because I agree with you that people should get behavioral health services. What do you see as the barriers to people getting them?
My personal opinion is that it is an overall systemic problem. From the minute that somebody walks in to receive the services, but we have providers that are just, I don't know of a better word except ignorant. And we also have providers that don't want to know. And it's not just, it works both ways with the IDD population. You have behavior health providers who are ignorant about the behavior health needs of individuals with IDD and also the physical health needs of mm-hmm. individuals with IDD. You have physical health providers who are ignorant about the behavioral health needs of individuals with IDD. And I don't like the term behavior health, but I don't have another term so that everybody knows what I'm talking about. And they're also ignorant about the physical health needs of individuals with IDD. Individuals with IDD are a unique subset that, yes, they share a lot in common with other subgroups. But, you know, if we Venn diagram it out, there's a lot of stuff that you need to understand about them. One of the things, and again, this is from my own personal experience, is the way that they actually metastasize medications. It's different than the way that other individuals may metastasize. You need to go low. And you need to start slow. If you can find the proper medication, there's a major barrier about what is behavior caused by pain. There seems to be ignorance out there that individuals with IDD can't experience pain. And again, that comes from my own personal experience. I actually had a neurologist tell me that my son couldn't experience pain because he couldn't say my head hurts.
Yeah.
And these are individuals who should know better. But the whole system is biased. And my son is no longer with us. He died 3 years ago. So I don't know if the system has improved in the last 3 years, but from what I've observed from the journey of others, it hasn't. I mean, the fact that we still have individuals with IDD who are held in emergency rooms for 30 days in locked restraints is abhorrent. So, and again, I understand it's not an exclusive Maricopa County problem. It's not an exclusive Arizona problem. It's a national problem. It's an international problem.
May I chime in a little bit as well?
Yeah, Lisa, okay. Go ahead.
And I think this is pretty much what Dee's saying, I think, as well, but it's really that that lack of appropriate trained providers, mental health and medical doctors, period. I mean, I know clinical psychologists that are really well trained with the IDD population, work with individuals with autism, that they provide clinical therapy for those individuals, counseling, et cetera. And they're booked. They have no time to add more individuals on their caseloads. And there are very few and far between clinical psychologists and medical doctors and in general that really know how to interact and work with individuals with developmental disabilities. There are individuals that are specialists that are trained with working with individuals with intellectual disabilities, et cetera, developmental disabilities, that oftentimes also are not well versed on the whole medical part of mm-hmm. their needs and physical part of their needs. So it takes some unique specialists to be able to work with our population. And there's not enough people in the workforce, because I've heard in IRs and PRCs that, you know, individuals that may they've been pursuing counseling for individuals with that are in their behavior plans, et cetera, and they would really benefit from an appropriate counselor, psychologist that knows how to work with grievance issues with an individual with, say, Down syndrome or an intellectual disability or autism or whoever it may be. There's just not enough providers. I think that's a huge systematic type of issue as well.
Before we go on, let me just ask, first of all, I'd like to welcome Carolyn. She just joined us. She's on the committee. Who's the phone that ends in 13? 928 and then ends in 13. I don't recognize that. You're on mute if you're trying to speak. Okay. Go ahead, Ann. Sorry. I'm just, you know, trying to know who's in the meeting.
No, that was great. That gave me a chance to write faster.
Listen, let me just tell you something. These notes, and I can forward them to you, so you don't have to take notes. I can forward you this whole dialogue if you want.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. So, saying.
Let me, I want to go back to something Dee said about people being stuck in emergency rooms. Why are people stuck in emergency rooms, in your opinion? Like, what's the issue with having people get out of an emergency room?
No beds available.
We've
had numerous occasions where our members are placed in the emergency setting and they don't have room for them. It's also one of the reasons why I think they treat people so quickly is they're trying to make room for new people to come in. It's just not enough. you know, beds for everyone who needs the service, and they can't keep the beds long enough for them to get really good service, right?
So those are behavioral health beds?
Yes.
Okay.
One thing too regarding the bill that Dee was talking about, because I helped to put that together. The primary purpose of it was to be a step down unit so that when they leave a behavioral health facility, they can go into one of these homes for that transition. That was part of it. I don't know that they're doing that. But that was part of the purpose of that bill, was to provide that. Is that how you understood it, Dee?
I think so, Linda. I'm not really that well versed in the law, in that law.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the goal that we're hoping for. Whether we get there or not, I don't know, because those step downs are going to be access facilities and not DDD facilities. So I don't know.
So James mentioned about the people going back and forth, and I think DD has a requirement that after they were supposed to have a 72 follow-up after they leave the behavioral health hospital. And part of one of the things I always ask is, did they have the 72 follow-up? Did the support coordinator attend? And that's sort of another one of those lack of information. And so I can't tell you if they have those 72-hour meetings after they leave or not for the DD people.
So I know I'm getting short on my time, and I know you have a lot of other meeting stuff. So let me, this has been really, really helpful. This is very interesting. I got some good stuff, but let me kind of end by saying, if I could give you all, as advocates for this population, if I could give you a magic wand and you could wave the magic wand, some of you have heard this before, you could wave the magic wand and you could make a change in the system for this specific population. So the folks with IDD who have needs in the behavioral health crisis system, what would you do with that magic wand? And I'd love to just give everybody who wants to just like kind of throw one out the chance to, you know, kind of weigh in on this. So someone start and then just jump in.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see integrated group home facilities that are both behavioral health and DE, so that the staff are fully trained in both sides. I feel like we have one or the other, and we have members that are dual diagnosed, and a lot of times their behavioral health diagnosis overwhelms their DD diagnosis, but it's hard to differentiate where the behaviors are coming from or how to support them in the most appropriate way. I think if we had staff who are trained on both sides of that, I think that they would be better served.
Awesome, thank you.
I would like to see better communication between the two worlds, IDD and behavior health, and the medical side of that in particular.
Okay. This is Lisa. I'd like to see mental health and medical practitioners be well-versed and trained and understand individuals with developmental disabilities.
Go ahead. I'd like to go even more basic than that.
Okay.
I'd like to see individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities recognized as human beings with the same rights and an entitlement to respect and kindness simply because they're human beings. And I'd like that provided that attitude shift. I'd like it to happen to all providers who are paid to care for them. Obviously, let alone the rest of society. But let's talk about people who have a professional responsibility. It would be nice for them to recognize all people as people who are entitled to dignity and respect.
Thank you.
And I like to see the SARS report from the behavioral health hospitals on our members.
Okay. Carolyn, you're on. You've been in these discussions. Do you have anything?
Yeah, I do want to see the medical aspect better handled, both in terms of providers getting over their own prejudice and biases and ignorance in terms of providing medical care to our members. But I would also like to see in the person-centered care plans, I would like to see the medical aspect of this addressed in a stronger way so that, for example, the leading five causes of death for DDD members are rarely addressed in a person-centered care plan. And if they are, it's very minimal. And I often feel like there's stuff in there that people don't understand. And so sometimes something that's medical is treated as behavioral when it's not, or something that's medical is maybe causing a behavioral issue and it's not being recognized. But I feel like the medical component is definitely weak.
Okay. Is there anybody else who would like to wave their magic wand here for Anne?
Yeah, please jump in if you've been kind of listening and want to add something. I will just say the problem of medical access has kind of come up in a couple of other places as well. So this is not the first time I've heard this in kind of these groups. So
just to piggyback a little bit, maybe wind this down a little bit. I'm not trying to summarize your remarks, of course, but just to piggyback a little bit off of what Dee said with regards to the respect. My son passed away just a few months after Dee's son did, but, and I said this the other evening in our meeting, these individuals are smart. They may have a difficulty in expressing it or showing that they understand what you're saying. And too often the people that work with them treat them as though they're imbeciles, and they're not. They need to be treated with respect. They need to be treated as though they would, as the way they want to be treated, with respect and with kindness, with regards. Figure out how to communicate with them. Figure out if they're in pain. But the bottom line is, these are people with feelings, and they need our assistance. And that's our job, is to help them however we can, but we need to treat them with the respect that everybody deserves to have and not look down at them because they have a disability.
Excuse me. Yes, thank you for that. And just, I'm very sorry to hear about both of your children.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, I know I am out of time, so I put my email in the chat. If anybody kind of thinks of anything that they wished they'd said and didn't, or think of something later that you kind of want to add to the conversation, feel free to shoot me an email. Dee, again, if you can try to get me in touch with somebody from Disability Rights, that would be awesome.
And check your email.
Okay, great. I can't talk and do anything else at the same time. I can barely read the chat.
I've got her email too. I can send it over to you.
And then the other thing is if anybody happens to know a family member who might want to share their experiences getting mental health or crisis care for their child, please feel free to share my email with them. We're still looking for two or three families to do the interviews. They take about 20 minutes over the phone. They're completely confidential. We just use all of the information in aggregate. And it's really focused, again, our focus is specifically on their experiences with the mental health care system.
Yeah, Linda, I'll go ahead and talk to my Aunt Carol. I think she would be a great candidate for the interview with Anne.
Yeah, definitely. Just shoot me an email. If you need some additional information, I have like a sample letter that you can give to families that explains the process. Have it in both English and Spanish. And we can do interviews in either language. We can do them in other languages if we have a little bit of lead time. And that's it. And then I know several of you are on the distribution list that I got from Access at the very beginning of this. So you will definitely be informed once the report and the findings are going to be presented.
Thank you, Anne. We appreciate you being here. And if you have any other thoughts or want to reach out to us, please feel free to do so.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all your time and your insights today. Have a good week, everyone.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, we are going to skip around on the agenda. We're going to jump to Richard and his gang so that they can talk to us a little bit about recruitment since we're in dire need of it with a few resignations happening today. So anyway, retirements, right? Richard, the floor is yours, my friend.
Okay, thank you. And thank you all for having Mickey and I at your IOC meeting. So we, Mickey and I are really trying to get the word out right now. We're working a lot internally with area program managers, district program managers, and support coordination. Trying to get the word out, trying to get support coordinators to talk to their families to see if any of their families have an interest in serving on the IOCs and or the PRCs. So that's what we're working on right now. I know that we are going to do some outreach up north with NAU, and that'll probably be happening in the next couple of weeks, maybe a week or two, depending on the weather. And so, you know, we're going to be plastering the postcards wherever, you know, they'll allow us to put them, and also to talk with some of the colleges. To try to get people for the IOCs that are studying and in, you know, the area of psychology, you know, the medical field, the education field, the social work field. So we definitely are trying to do that up north, and we're also going to be providing postcards and trying to really push up north with our tribal liaison to try to get people way up north to see if there's an interest in also volunteering. Do you want to add some additional stuff, Mickey, if you're still on?
Yeah, sure. I'm still here. So yeah, like Richard said, we're exploring some different options for recruitment as far as going to college campuses and trying to get people there. I know that different departments have different volunteer boards for opportunities to get involved. So I'm working on getting us listed on those. I'm also creating a slide deck presentation for recruitment purposes. So that way, if there's any of these groups that have several people interested, we can do a quick presentation about what the volunteer process looks like for us and make it really easy to kind of capture people and bring them in. And that being said, if any of you guys who are advocates and out in the community and around these spaces have places where you're like, you know what, I feel like they've got some volunteer material somewhere in, you know, this group or that group, let us know. And we're more than happy to jump on and talk to them. Or if you think of anything just in your like day to day and you want to shoot Richard and I a chat or an email, our inboxes are always open. Yeah, do you?
Yeah, Mickey, well, you're working on those materials. If you could, Richard and I have discussed this before, but these ladies in District Central IOC may have some suggestions for you.
Yeah.
Richard talked about bullet pointing it, but it's referred to as an elevator speech.
Oh, yeah. Getting our pitch down, our 30-second.
But I'm not worried about you and Richard's elevator speech. What I'm looking for is an elevator speech for IOC members to recruit. So any advice that you guys would have for us, and I know you're coming to our meeting on Tuesday, and hopefully you're going to brainstorm with our group so that we can help to develop that. And then if you've got some social media shareable stuff, I'll shoot it out to the special needs family support groups that I belong to. But you have to do me a favor. A PDF does not help me. I don't want to have to convert it. So send me a JPEG or send me text.
Yeah. And that is actually something that, yeah, and social media, that's a big thing that I'm working on right now. I'm not sure. I'm actually having a conversation with my supervisor tomorrow about how we go about creating some social media shareables, just to make sure that everything government-wise is, you know, I's are dotted, T's are crossed, all of that. That way we're able to share those out on, you know, your individual social medias, especially LinkedIn and like professional networking, but then also on like in like these Facebook groups and ways that are catching of the eye to get people interested.
The other thing that Richard and I have also discussed, and I'm going to repeat this. I've said it before, and I want everybody to understand. We are asking the two of you to do an almost impossible job. The type of people that we are looking for to participate in the IOC, and there's a list. We're looking for people with expertise in very specific areas. People who normally have those qualifications are very busy people,
yes,
with very little patience for bureaucracy.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, as we all know, and these ladies have more patience than most people that I've had the privilege of meeting in my life, and this is not a slam toward anyone who works at DDD, but it is a very cumbersome and onerous system to work within. And I know I just lost my vice chair a couple months ago because after 5 years, she didn't feel she made a difference and her time could be used a lot more productively, although she won't put it in writing because her husband works for the system. And he works for DCS, so she certainly doesn't want anything like that in writing. And she hasn't vocalized that because, again, she's worried about difficulties that may create for her husband. And she's also a foster parent, so she's worried about retaliation, even though she won't say it. So whatever we can do in District West to help you and Richard do your job, please let us know. And that's what our meeting tomorrow evening is going to be all about. It's cooperation and collaboration. So let us awesome. Know.
Perfect. Will do.
Before I turn it over to Larry, I have one thing for you guys. We have had several people come on our committee that really looked like good candidates. And their comments were, first of all, they didn't realize the amount of time it takes. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason it takes so much time, especially for District Central, is because we are so small right now. And we don't have a lot of people to share the workload with. But number two, what they said was they didn't feel like they knew enough. I mean, we throw acronyms around like it's, you know, candy. And I remember when I first came on, you know, I didn't know what they were talking about. I mean, I only knew DDD because my son was in it. That was it. But and HRC because I was going to be joining. Anyway, so I think it's important to stress to them that your lack of knowledge at this point is not important in spite of, I mean, and I know Dee said we need to have professionals or the list is professionally oriented, but even at that, they don't understand all the nuances that we do. And just if we can encourage them, you know, you'll come along, just hang in there with us, raise your hand if you have questions. And if you don't know what an acronym stands for, ask.
Yeah.
And write it down. I mean, I made a list because then I'm going through it, you know, alphabetical. What does that mean? Anyway, so I think that's really important because this one in particular who would have been wonderful on the committee was, that's why she didn't want to do it because she felt, and she, you know, I mean, she's a doctor of education and she felt like she didn't have enough information. She was not knowledgeable enough. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So Larry, a question to go off of that real quick.
Okay.
What are ways do you think that Richard and I would be able to kind of help with that sense of insecurity? Would it be like some more regular check-ins with new volunteers? Of that reassurance? Like what, do you have any ideas or thoughts about how we could best support new volunteers?
I think first of all, the introduction to it was, you're going to hear a lot. Don't be overwhelmed. Because you will get into it and they will bring you along. These are good folks whose hearts are dedicated to blessing the lives, if you will, of the members served. And they will work with you and bring you along. So don't give up, don't lose hope, and hang in there. I think that's, you know, just that. Anyway, can I call on Larry real quick? He had his hand raised. Larry? I think he's an important component in this too because he's our direct, you know, he's the one we go to. So go ahead, Larry. And I love Larry, by the way. Just saying. Larry.
Larry.
He stepped away. Lisa, go ahead. You're on mute, Lisa.
Okay, just real quickly to kind of follow that up. I know that when I joined, it took me like a few years to really understand the acronyms because I came from a field
where the acronyms were the same but meant something different. So maybe even something like a one single sheet or two page kind of introduction of like, new acronyms can be overwhelming, and then just put a list of the commonly used acronyms like IOC, PRC, and then also the main areas like Article 9, what does that mean? And just kind of like the common areas that we use regularly in the meetings. It would have been super helpful if I had that in advance to be like, okay, that's what that means. So then it wasn't like listening to a foreign language the first year.
Absolutely. And I, so I started this position at the very end of November. My experience and my background is in volunteer management, not in government acronyms necessarily. So this has been a completely new world for me. So I completely understand the challenges around learning to speak this language. So creating that list and that cheat sheet, absolutely. I think that's a great idea. And in this recruitment presentation that I'm creating, I'm working, I have like the first like few slides of it that I have built out right now are, what is DDD? What are the PRC and the IOC? Like what are these things? What is Article 9? With just like a very basic kind of beginner's guide to being introduced to those ideas as they're being recruited.
Larry, are you on? Larry? Michelle? You're on mute, yeah.
Oh, well, I wanted to thank you guys for the feedback and the discussion today. As I sit in the meeting, I'm writing myself a few notes about orientation and introduction of new IOC members. So we do provide a list of commonly used, or at least we have since I've been onboarded as an IOC liaison. We do provide a list of commonly used acronyms, but I've just wrote myself a note to make sure that we're, as IOC coordinators here, liaisons, that we're going to be sure to explain some of those commonly used acronyms and go over a few with our new members as we're onboarding and going through that orientation process. So thank you for this discussion. I like to have some takeaways, and that's going to be my takeaway. Appreciate it.
Michelle, do you mind sending that acronym list over to me?
Sure, not a problem.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Thank you, I just sent you two of them as well. I put them in the chat, not in the meeting chat, but in your IM.
Oh, perfect, thank you so much.
Thanks, James.
Larry? Hey, go ahead. I'm gonna call him.
Okay. We've been in the 5+ years that I've been on the IOC, we've been talking about IOC training and formal trainings. And I know it's your job, Michaela and Richard to recruit. And as we've discussed, recruiting is worthless without retention. So obviously, you know, you're working with Michelle.
And Larry,
because Larry's got all the IOCs. But if you could help push together a training program, you know, everybody talks about how there's no money, but now we have a Zoom. So there's no reason, you know, that we can't do online trainings. But if you had that available to you while you are recruiting, you could say, you know, not only are we recruiting, but we have a mentoring program. You know, we'll give you a peer member, and you could help the IOC chairs and vice chairs to put together a mentorship program. I know, you know, Linda and I have spoken of when Linda first started, and the great Karen Van Epps really handheld Linda. And that should be, I mean, it,
until the day she passed away, she handheld.
It would be nice as an IOC chair, you know, to have a tip sheet, check in with, you know, check it. We're all busy people, mm-hmm. but check in with your people, support your people. You know, obviously it's tough to build relationships now that everything's online. But, you know, if we could work together, I mean, I don't, Michaela and Richard, I'm not, and Richard and I again had this discussion last week, not saying that you guys are the miracle workers and you have to fix everything, but if we could work with you to develop these tools, it'll make your job a little bit less impossible. I don't want to say easier, because you know it's going to be a very difficult job no matter how much work you do, and I want everybody to understand that. I'm just excited that, unlike your predecessor, I see a lot more initiative on your part to reach out to the community and to work with us. So I'm Team Richard and Michaela 100%. Whatever I can do to help you, you let me know.
Richard, even though I'm leaving, I want you to know that I'll be available to help you with that if you need it, because, you know, I've been around a little while, and so just a little while. But like Karen said, like Dee said, I have the handheld. I was handheld by the best, if you know. Uh-huh. We all know Karen, right? Well, most of us do anyway. So
yeah. Bless her. Thank you, Linda, and thank you, Dee, for those comments. Me and Mickey will work, because I'm really excited about that notion regarding, you know, getting some type of IOC training program implemented, because I think it would be crucial to have, you know, once we come up with a format, you know, having somebody from behavioral health come and talk to you about, you know, maybe making your job easier when you're reviewing, you know, the documents that you do review, and you know, even to take it a step further and kind of do that with PRC as well, because I think it's important for both sets of committees to get some type of, you know, structure in place so that people aren't left to kind of muddle their way through right. a lot of, you know, the stuff. And feel all alone. So thank you for your support. And thank you all, you know, for the volunteer work that you do, because me and Mickey, we know it's a lot, and we do appreciate every one of you.
Thank you, Richard. Larry, is your mic working?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Hello? We can hear you and see you.
My goodness. I had to reboot, change headphones. I don't know what the heck was wrong. But I wanted to piggyback the recruitment talk that we were having. Last month, I had a call with Carlos. Goodness, I forgot his last name. But he's the Boards and Commission Director. That's it. For Governor Hobbs. And he is going to, when they interview candidates for positions for appointees, they're going to, if that candidate turns out not to be a good fit for that particular commission, they're going to ask if they're interested for any more volunteer opportunities, and then they're going to try to direct them over to the IOC. So hopefully we'll see an uptick in membership through that. I'll monitor that and follow back up with him here shortly this month to find out if he's had any luck getting anybody over to us. So,
excellent. Thank you, Larry. That's great. Dee?
Yeah. Hey, Larry, there was just an article in the media NAZI Central about how Carlos's commission, and I don't remember his name either, but his commission is having quite the bottleneck with,
yes, I noticed
with appointments. Is that going to affect the IOCs at all, or once they recruit, we're going to be able to go smoothly through the process?
Yes, he does have quite a bit of openings. If you looked at his list, I think like 15 pages or so of openings. But no, it does not affect us at all. So we're off that map. So yeah.
Okay. Anything else, Richard or Mickey?
No, I can't think of anything. You know, we'll be looking forward to working with all the IOCs, and we will see you, Dee, tomorrow.
Yes.
So thank you for having us. Yes,
thank you for coming. We appreciate the update. And thank you, Larry, too, for all that you do to help us with this. Okay, we're going to go back up to number 6, the ASH motion and review. I'll turn this over to who? Lisa, Eva, who wants to handle it? Michelle has the questions to screen share for us.
Since Eve, it was Eva's baby, I'd like to, maybe Eva can present and then, or at least initiate.
Well, I think we met and we came up with some questions and then we tailored them down. And I can't remember who was going to screen share the questions so that
Michelle's going to. Michelle's got it. Michelle's got it.
So basically what we were looking at was ASH and their response to our motion that we sent over. And so number 2 on dealing with ASH, we wanted to know if they're when you have the SARS listing of mechanical and chemical restraints, is that the same report that they sent over in December by the 7th to the QMU?
And I think that I'm going to chime in a little bit, Eva, as well. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I think we just created the list of concerns and then formulated them into a little bit more direct, specific questions that we had no answers to and that we were either unclear about or did not have the answer. Does that make sense?
Can we just read through them and make a motion? I don't think we need to explain because we've had this discussing our meeting, and then you took it back to the committee, and based on our meetings and based on the questions.
So do we just need to read them out loud then?
I think so for the minutes, correct? Is that correct, Michelle, or can we just submit it? Or Larry?
So you may not need to if the committee has all seen these points and feels comfortable in discussing and voting. Really what it comes down to for presenting is if the committee's in agreement and they have a motion and a vote which provides an agreement to present this forward to ASH.
I'm not sure if have all committee members gone through and read over the questions.
I don't think Debbie has seen it. I don't know if Carolyn saw the final.
Okay.
And I don't think Mandy did, but Mandy's not here. So
I can just read through them.
Read through them for the record, and then we can have a motion, discussion, and a vote.
Okay. So number 1 is, do UHC and Mercy Care have their own QMU or a shared QMU for DDD members while in the behavioral health hospitals? If so, are they required to share their information with DDD's QMU? Sub question under this is, do they share their seclusion and restraint incidents with DDD's QMU per SARS DDD policy 962? If not, why not, since the DDD policy includes all members? And do the behavioral health hospitals for UHC and Mercy Care follow Arizona Code 921-204? Number two, earlier ASH report response indicating that an ASH monthly report of all seclusion and restraint events involving DDD members are sent to DDD's QMU. If this is a separate report not included in IRs, the IOC would like a copy included for their review prior to each IOC meeting. Does this monthly report include prior redirection, antecedents, and precursors, as well as other least restrictive measures used prior to restraint, parentheses, AZ code 9-21-204? Number three, how does DDD's QMU track and trend the SARS quarterly report from DDD members, including the members at ASH, that is sent to QM/PI committee? And what do they do with those reports? The IOC would like a copy of the quarterly reports as well as the QM/PI committee's recommendations. Number four, what are the protocols for UHC and Mercy Care when the group home or guardian is not available, refuses to pick up a DDD member being released? Question, who is accountable for discharge procedures / guardian and or group home education on discharge instructions? Question mark. Number five, are the behavioral health hospitals having a 72-hour post-release meeting? Question, is the support coordinator always invited? Question. Number six, does DDD pay for their members while in UHC and Mercy Care behavioral health hospitals? Do UHC and Mercy Care follow Article 9 on DDD members while in the behavioral health hospitals? If so, who trains the staff on Article 9? And then there was just the Arizona Code 9-21-204 quoted. And that's it.
And then we attached again the codes and that it refers to for their reference. So are there any questions? Do I have a motion?
Eva wants to make a motion that we submit these six questions to DOA to forward them to DDD.
Do I have a second?
Lisa seconds.
Thank you. Do we have any discussion on any of the questions? Any comments? Okay, I'll call for the vote. Eva?
Yes.
Lisa?
Yes.
Carolyn?
Yes.
Debbie? Is Debbie still on? Did we lose Debbie somewhere?
She may have been the one that just left with a 2-2 ending number.
Yeah, she is. Okay, so in that case, I vote, right, Michelle? Since we have to have four?
Yes, correct.
And I vote yes. All right, the motion is passed, and that will be submitted to Larry for submission to DDD, as submitted before you guys. Okay, got that done. Let's see.
Debbie just came in, so she could vote if she wanted to have her vote.
Counted. We already did it, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. The next item is the ECT. We had this at statewide. We had this discussion at statewide regarding ECT. I told Zane that we had made it known to the legislature, as well as language for inclusion into the IOC statute, that IOCs have review over ECT because it's not in there. If DDD does get that in statute where DDD members are allowed by law to have ECT, we want to have that in our statute. So I won't be here to follow up on it. And I just want you guys to be aware that is something that needs to be on your radar, okay? To make sure. And I know Dee wrote the legislation based on some other stuff. And I said, check this language. And she wrote it. And so we both have submitted it. So I know she's going to be on top of it as well.
But just to clarify, it's not actually the way that I drafted it, unless it was changed. It's not the IOC itself that that has the review of ECT. It's the program review committee, but there must be an IOC representative on the PRC.
Correct.
Reviewing.
Correct. But it has to be in our statute specified. Right. And that's what I am talking about, to make sure that I don't care what happens with the bill. If they get it through, great. But I do care if it's in the 38, whatever it is, or 41, whatever it is.
But that's the review. I don't want them to think that every time somebody needs ECT, there's going to be a vote by a full independent review committee. It's going to be the program review committee, but it can only be a program review committee that has an IOC member in attendance.
Correct.
To make sure that those rights are protected.
Well, and if they're not in PRC, or if they're not involved in that PRC, they need to get it to the IOC chair one way or another. But that's a moot point, because as you remember, Zane was so eloquent in his statement, Linda, IOC does not have that authority in statute. So not a problem. We're making sure it is. Okay. So can you guys make sure, follow up on that, make sure that it happens, okay?
And we need to be concerned, because Ash is not equipped to do with ECT.
True. Is anybody really? I mean, I don't know, but anyway. Okay. All right. That's what I wanted to say about ECT. It was a heads up. And let's see, regarding the, I know I want to talk about PRC. Where is that on here? Oh, review of the PRC BTP. Another heads up for you guys. Let's talk a little bit, when you do PRC, what we need to be looking for so that we are consistent here, okay? And this can be a discussion, all right? This is what I do. This is what I've been taught to do over the many years. Eva, you have surely been involved in PRC, so if you have something more to add, I would appreciate it. And Carolyn and Lisa, so, and Dee. Oh, wait, Dee doesn't do it, sorry. But you know what to look for. Okay, so I'm reading through. Let's just take it. And Patricia, if you're on, join in. I'm inviting you. But this is what I do when I read it. First of all, I look at their diagnoses. D.
Yeah, Linda.
One thing said, and you already have a comment.
Linda. I'm wondering, as your legacy, if you wouldn't give us a written list so that it can be part of it would be part of the training program that we were just talking about when we were talking with Mickey and Richard.
Okay. We'll talk about that.
Because
refer to the minutes of, no, I'm kidding.
It would be done by an expert. I don't know of anybody who has more PRC experience, Linda, than you do. And I mentioned before we started this call, I have breakfast every morning with one of my IOC members, who is the one from our IOC committee who does PRC. And she was very disappointed, because she told me Linda knows everything about PRC. And I reassured her that you would be available for consultation and guidance. If Lisa can call in from the Bahamas, you can call in from wherever. So we're not
Lisa and Linda.
Yeah.
Linda, I'd be willing to do the writing for you, and you could be on the phone and you just tell me and I'll transcribe and then I'll send it to you and you can just edit it to make it be a reflection of exactly what you're thinking.
You guys are the best. Patricia, you got to be in on this too, okay? Because you and I know you and I work hand in hand. Before the PRC, after the PRC, during the PRC. So Patricia is my wingman, or I'm her wingman. I don't know which, but Patricia's the best, can I just say? I mean, you guys, it's an honor to work with her. So, all right. So going through a behavior plan, this is what I do. So I look at I look to see how old he is. Is this plan going to be age appropriate for him, right? Is he old? Is he young? Is he, you know, just in high school, you know, just whatever the age is it age appropriate? And then I look to see who the guardians are, if he has guardians. Rep payees, is that around? And generally, you can't find it just off the top because the support coordinator does not fill out one of the important pages, which is the member profile information page. That's Roman numeral number one. And on there, it's got the legal guardian, it's got the healthcare decision maker, it's got rep payee, contact, all of that. And that's generally left blank. So that's something when you're going through it that you need to point out needs to be filled out. But generally, when you read through the dialogues, you sometimes will see who the rep payee is. And if it's DDD, for me, I mean, there's no excuse if they're over the limit or near the limit or whatever, because DDD has policy and they need to be following that policy. Okay, and then I look to see what the adaptive equipment is. And then I thumb through over to the PCSP to see what adaptive equipment they have listed and compare to see if it's the same. And if it's not the same, then I compare, do comparing and contrasting and what needs to be included. Is this still current? Or sometimes they'll say the member needs a helmet and we're working on getting that. So my question is, as a rights interest, what's the status of the helmet, or what's the status of getting his glasses? And here's another thing. Sometimes they have glasses or they have hearing aids, and yet on the medical check, they don't have checked on the box that they get hearing tests or eye exams on an annual basis, or they have diabetes and they're not getting their blood checked on a quarterly basis. You know, things like that. Look for those kinds of things. And then I read the history, where they are now, and then the social history. And generally, the BTP has a great history. And 99.9% of the time, the history is missing in the PCSP. And the PCSP is very specific on what they want. They want to know about the birth. They want to know developmental. They want to know the education. They want to know previous living situations. I've even had support coordinators tell me, I've never read that section, Linda. Thank you for pointing that out. It's Roman numeral two, bold, underlined. How can you miss that? But instead, what they have in that section are the meeting notes for the last 3 years. So, I mean, that's great to get the meeting notes. You can read through those and see what they've discussed, what's going on, get the updates. However, it's not history. And history for me, and I'm sure for you, is important because we can kind of see maybe he's been abused as a child. That's why we've got some of the behaviors that we have going on because of his abuse. Or he was, you know, there's lots of reasons why some of these behaviors are occurring because of past history. Okay, so then I look at the, in the behavior plan, I look at what the goal is, or what's it called, Patricia? The behavior, the
The teaching objective?
Yes. What are they trying to do? And then I read through the methodologies and just make sure that the strategies that they're using are not violating his rights. For example, in one we did, what was it, last week or the week before? It actually said force him to do. What part of force is allowed in Article 9? So it's important that you read through those strategies and methodologies. And I know, Lisa, you've got the background in this, and that's your thing. But what we really need to make sure as IOC members is that we are watching for rights violations in those methodologies. And are they able, will they be able to be successful at them? Carolyn? Dee had a question. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dee. I'm sorry.
Linda, can you please share with them what you shared with us last week at the statewide meeting?
Which part?
What's the number one thing that you do? Or do you want me to tell? I want it on the record. Linda's number one mission, excuse me, when it involves anything regarding a DDD member, especially program review committee, is that Linda looks at each of these individuals as a mother. Whether they have their own mother or not, she treats every individual as if they were Mark, Becky, or Brent, her own children. And that's the standard that she brings to the table and that she expects everybody else to bring to the table, that these individuals be treated with that dignity and respect and that mother's eye and that mother's heart. And I think that's the most important thing as IOC members, whether we're mothers or not, or we're brothers, or we're sisters, or fathers.
Absolutely.
Or friends.
I'm taking notes.
We are connected to these individuals, and we are representatives of their families, their friends, and our community. And that's the most important thing that we bring to the table as IOC members. We start from there, and everything else flows.
Thanks, Dee. Got me emotional here. Anyway, so after that, I look next in the BTP are the meds. And so then I flip over to the PCSP to check. And I also look for the doctor's notes in there. Is that what it's called, Patricia, the doctor's notes, medical order? What is it called?
You mean the med review?
Yeah, the med review. Thank you. And see, she knows all the right words. But I just look and okay, and I write down the pages so that when there's discussion, I can refer to those pages. But I check to make sure that all three pages are consistent in the meds, the doses, the times, and very frequently they are not. So they're not consistent, and that's another violation. I mean, what if somebody picks up the doctor's notes and starts reading the doctor's notes and gives the meds the way they're giving them, and the DTA reads them the way the PCSP says it's different than that, and the group home's doing something else, and the poor kid's suffering? Okay, we got to have consistency here. And then, let's see, what's after? And also, if there are rights restrictions, they would be listed in the behavior plan. But there's also section X or 10 in the PCSP, and that's where those rights restrictions also need to be listed in the PCSP. And the big thing here, the big key takeaway, is the PCSP is the contract with access. The BTP is an addendum to the PCSP. And we have to remember that. And when the PCSP is not complete or and even signed with dates, It's a not valid document. Dee, do you want to step in here and say your little thing about licensing? I love Dee's comments on this. It's scary, actually.
Anybody who, this is why I refuse to sit on the PRC, because even though I'm retired, I still have my law license in the state of New York. So if you have a professional license and you're not following your professional code of ethics that go with your license, anybody can file a grievance against you with your licensing board. And I'm not willing to put my professional license, even though it's in retirement, on the line, unfortunately, because the system doesn't seem to understand, and all the individuals within the system don't seem to understand how important medical records and the consistency of medical records are. And anyone who works within the system, whether you're paid or you're a volunteer, you're required to follow the professional ethics of your profession. So if you have a medical license and you're in charge of oversight for DDD, you're an employee of DDD, if there is a lawsuit similar to the lawsuit we had a few years ago with Hacienda, you could end up before your licensing review committee and you could lose your license. So I'm not willing to do that. Unfortunately, not everybody understands that their license is on the line every time. So
just a little heads up on that. Okay. And then after, that's the end of the BTP. Then I get into the PCSP. And like I said, I look at section number one, which is the, I've done this so much, I'm going off the top of my head, but section number one is the member responsible person contact information. Generally, that's left blank. It needs to be completed. And then comes the history section. And then the daily living and living environment, that sort of thing. Just read through that, make sure it's current, up to date. Most often these PCSPs are not. I've had he's living in a group home when in fact he's in an ADH now. But so just look at that. The next really big thing is the HAB goals. And I don't know if you guys remember, but back on the ISP, the HAB goals were filled out. There was the goal, and then the methods were written, and then who will do that, who's going to help do that. And those generally always are left blank. And we had a supervisor from DDD on one of our PRCs, and I said, is that supposed to be left blank? And she said, she explained those sections. The what will be done section, or what needs to be done, refers to the barriers that might prevent the individual from being successful at the goal. So, and how we're going to get rid of those barriers and what we're going to do to help him get those done. So basically it's the strategies and methodologies. Number two, who will do it? Who's going to be the one to do the strategies? Who's going to be the one that will remove those barriers? This is the big thing. I always end this section with, per DDD, this should not be left blank. So, and then I said, encourage, you have to always, be positive at the end of these things. So you have to say, you can get this probably from the DTA or the group home or the that wrote the goals, because they have to have the steps. So just say, give us the goals. So that's that. And then we talked about the restrictions. In these, you must always have a spending plan, because it's from, whether it's whether the parents are the rep pays or not. And I explained to the parents, this is why we have to have this included, because I would not want to give Mark's finances out. But if he was living in a DTA or an ADH, I would have to do that because it's DDD funded residential facility. So that spending plan must always be included and all the sections must be complete. The assets filled out, the expenses filled out, what's the bottom line? And if you're curious, DDD does have a policy regarding that. They have opened up, thanks to us, they have opened up, I believe it's thanks to us because we were making a stink about it, about the that the support coordinator has access to the DDD or to the, if when they are the rep payee, that they can take a look at the member's account. So every quarter when they go in for that 90-day meeting, the support coordinator should have the balance of what's in there. And Leah, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I know that there is, I'm pretty sure there's a policy regarding the, is it at 1,000 the support coordinator notifies the team, and at 1,500 there must be a spend down started? I think that's the way I read that.
I need to go in and double check it, but there is a policy regarding the when we are representative payee.
Right, right. And I think it's the 1,000 they need to notify the team that they're at $1,000 and start to plan a spend down. And when they're at 1,500, there must be a spend down going in. And the reason that I say that is I did a PRC probably about a month ago, I think it was, Patricia, where the individual had lost his Alltech services and DDD was the rep payee. So, you know, there's just no excuse for that. But so that, and then there also must be safeguards in there. And then the final thing I look at is the signatures. And oftentimes it will say member unable to sign. Well, I'm sorry, you said on page 1 and page 32 that this guy has a guardian. So the member is not the responsible party. There must be a signature. It's on the, there's two signatures required, informed consent, and I don't know what, I forget what the other one is, but and dates. Otherwise, it's not valid. D.
Linda, back to the example with the spending plan and the individual losing their access eligibility.
Alltech's
eligibility. Yeah. Would you please just share with them how far over the $2,000 the assets were?
Wasn't it 29,000?
I thought you had said 19, but either one is extremely egregious.
Yeah. I don't remember. I just, you know, once I get it resolved, I move on, you know. So, and he did get his services back. Thank you, Leah. Appreciate that. That was great.
Anytime, Linda.
Well, anytime for the committee now, right? I'm kidding. Okay. So, Patricia, do you have anything to add to what I have said?
No, Linda, I think you've covered the majority of the, as you know, there's always different situations that you and I discuss when we read a plan, but I think you've covered most of the general things that they can look for. And I'm always available if anyone needs any help.
Right. Patricia is wonderful. And also, if you don't mind, I mean, Patricia, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I always send Patricia my notes so that it's not so hard, because, you know, we've only got 30 minutes and we kind of rushed through everything. It's hard for her to get everything written down. So I type everything up as I'm going through it. And then I just, after the meeting, I just forward it on to her so that she has my comments and can make sure that she got them all. Is that correct? Do you still want that, Patricia?
Yes, please. That would be appreciated.
James.
I would just share that, you know, as a time saver, if you put all of the notes together about changes, like the any problems that you identify with the PCSP, and give those to Patricia, because those all go to support coordination, whereas the people who are presenting the plan is generally the provider. And so then leave your questions for the actual plan itself so that you can spend that as much of that 30 minutes as possible, walking through the plan. I mean, the actual behavior plan itself. That would be my suggestion, because support coordination, we can give a list of corrections to and have them correct them and send them back to you guys. But you have the vendors on site giving you the presentation almost, all the time. And then any questions you might have about the validity or the effectiveness of the plan or the data that they're presenting, you have them right there for those 30 minutes. So spend as much of the 30 minutes on that as you can.
That's, I think, exactly what we're doing, James. Right, yeah. Linda?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think that is the best use of the time in my experience. And I've had quite a bit of it with PRC. So,
well, we do have an issue because we oftentimes do not have support coordination in the meeting. So,
yeah, that's why I said it. But Patricia can always send those to the SC and their supervisor and the district managers to get those corrected. But you actually have the vendors there during those 30 minutes and to ask those questions face to face on the plan itself, and that's the part that they're responsible for. So,
yeah, in my disposition sheets, I have a section where it says support SC corrections. And so they're very familiar that they're usually at the bottom of the disposition. And we don't normally request for the next 90-day review to be fixed. If some of them do, send them a little earlier, but I think we're following the suggestion at this time, and I appreciate that.
The other thing too, James, is that the providers are having a difficult time getting the current PCSP in a timely manner. Because we'll say Patricia will say the PCSP is expired. Oh, well, we just had one, like last month. And then the provider will say, well, we've been requesting it. And what they're doing now too, I have noticed, is that they are including the emails that they have requested that PCSP from the support coordinator. So just a little.
Yeah, maybe Patricia can forward those to the district manager to resolve. I think that's a support coordinator issue that needs to be addressed immediately, right?
She's taking care of it. She does, don't you, Patricia? I know you do that.
Yes, I do.
So I'm just telling you, since you brought it up, what some of the issues are that we face with regards to that, So, and I know you're hearing this too, Leah, but anyway, and you've heard it before in our statewide. It's not like Maine doesn't know, right? Okay, any questions on the behavior plan? Lisa or Carolyn or Eva, do you have any comments?
I do. Okay. One of my concerns about the PRCs is often the attitude of the team that we're talking to. And we're not there to tear anybody down. We're there to provide constructive criticism. And, it's not fun to hear criticism, but it is something that anyone who's a professional should be prepared to listen to. And, so often there is time wasted during these very short meetings on pushback by the team and arguing from the team. And sometimes it's so egregious that in two cases, I made complaints about the behavior of two people. Other times it's just it's not so severe, but it still wastes time. And I really wish that the teams that we talk to could see that where some outside eyeballs, which are always helpful in looking at something like this, who want what's best for the member and who also, want to make things not only great for the member, but great for the staff caring for that member. We're not seen that way.
I'm wondering, Carolyn, this is Lisa. I'm wondering, Carolyn, and forgive me if I'm out of line here, but I wonder if there's a way to just preface the beginning of each PRC with a simple statement that say, you know, and I, Patricia, I know you've done it before in some ways. And I know there's another person who sits on PRC who prefaces all of her questions with like a sandwich of positive and then goes into the criticism and then sandwiches mm-hmm. with positive, of course. But maybe there's a simple statement that PRC, just the beginning introduction, and incorporate something, just a reminder that we're all here to help this individual and provide, you know, I don't know. You know what I mean though, right?
Yes, yeah. I think that's a great idea, but I also think that this needs to be something that is discussed with these teams by their supervisors so that the supervisor can help put them in the appropriate mindset for these meetings. And so this should be something that's part of their training, and it should be something that's part of their ongoing training, and it should be something that is periodically briefly revisited during team meetings with their staff so that when they meet with us, they have more of that mindset.
And I don't know about, you know, because that's not in our wheelhouse to whether we can direct that to happen
right.
or not. However, like Lisa said, and like I say and do, you know, we do need to preface our remarks with, we're not a member of the team. We don't know this individual like you do. However, reading this plan, I have some questions regarding da-da-da-da-da. You know, something like that where you're giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
And putting a little bit of, you know, onus on everybody, basically, please explain to me why this is happening. But you're mm-hmm. saying it in such a way that, you know, you're admitting, you know, I'm not a team member here. I'm not a member of the team. I don't know this individual like you guys do. But just reading this outside perspective, I just have a few questions. And maybe if we preface it like that, it might not be taken negatively.
Yeah, that's great suggestion, Linda.
So Dee's thinking, yeah, that's positive Linda here. Always do. Anyway, okay. Any other questions regarding the BTP and the PRC process? Patricia, love you to pieces. You know I do. If you have any questions, I'm here. Okay.
Thank you, Linda. I appreciate it.
Okay. Leah, do you want to do statewide or do you want to do it with your remarks when we get to that, or we're winding down here?
I thought you'd want to cover the other agenda items. I have Zane's update.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Yep, that's good. Let's see. Let's jump to incident reports. Anything in general that doesn't require the executive session? Eva, this is your baby. Anything in general?
Well,
you're seeing.
I was just really unhappy about one of the individuals that died.
Is that exactly? Well, I've got one too that I'm unhappy about, but
so yeah, so
but that's executive, right? Individual.
Yeah, so you know, I have been making my comments and
how are your answers? Are you getting good answers back?
I was really happy with the ones that I got the last time.
Good.
And so I did mention that. And so.
James, kudos to your team.
Yeah, I guess the training has helped. I did see an improvement in the documented notes for each of those cases. So I do appreciate that my team stepped up to do that.
Let them know we've noticed, okay?
I will, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, nothing else on those of a general nature?
No, most of mine are specific.
All right, let's talk about items for next meeting. Anybody have any thoughts for the items for the next meeting?
Oh, thank you. Ooh, thank you.
Okay, be thinking about it, you guys. Let's see. Next, let's go to the updates and then we'll do elections. How's that?
Down here. right here.
Michelle?
That? Yeah.
Eva, are you talking?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Michelle, do you want to do the updates for everybody?
Sure, I'll take care of that.
You've
got it. Okay. So, Joan, did you have an update by any chance?
I do. Hi, everybody. We have broken down the districts for the liaisons. So Michelle will be working with, and I have to write it down so I don't get it sideways. Michelle is going to continue covering statewide, and she will also be working with District South and District West. And Morgan will be working with District Central, District East, and District North. So just to let everybody know who will be covering what. So District Central can begin communicating with Morgan. She's a very bright lady. I mean, she's got a background in special education. She was a teacher for 10 years, so she's got a big, she's got a passion for our members. And obviously, Michelle and Morgan support each other, so they'll both be attending all of the IOC meetings, just like Michelle and Jeffrey used to. And unless I have an unforeseen circumstance, I'm here as well every month, so for all of the IOCs. Linda, you're on mute.
Thank you, Joan. And Michelle, we will miss your leadership, but it's been fun and we look forward to working with Morgan. Thank you.
Thank you. And I have enjoyed working with your committee as well. I'm not going anywhere, so I'll still be present and able to assist where you guys need me. James, do you have an update by any chance?
Not really at this time. QMU is going to be initiating some vendor trainings on to support them in using our new reporting form. We hope that that will improve the quality of the incident reports that we're receiving from vendors. We're going to be talking to them about like how to include all the details of like what they did, you know, with regards to like team follow-up and things like that, so that it reduces the number of questions that we're having to ask and go back to them for. Also, I think many of you guys know I've been working with a group on a internal improvement project with regards to behavior plans, and we actually got our first data back for them using Focus to track whether or not members need behavior plans and whether they have a current behavior plan. So we'll be reviewing that data this week, actually. So we're very excited about that. And that way we'll be able to pull monthly reports on who has a plan and who needs a plan and whose plans are expiring, and should hopefully help us to try to reduce the amount of behavior plans that are missing or expired. That's it.
That's excellent.
Patricia, did you have an update?
I don't have any updates, but I do wanted to ask the committee, we are getting ready for the February sessions, so I do need some volunteers. So I think I did share the flyer that went out for February. So please, if you're interested and if you have the opportunity to join us, please send in your dates if it's possible. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia.
Okay, Leah, save the best for last.
Well, I don't know about best, but thank you, Michelle. good afternoon, everyone.
during the statewide IOC, and I don't have the entire agenda in front of me, Linda, so forgive me, but I wanted to share with the committee Zane's updates that he wanted folks to be aware of. I've been reporting back for a while to the committee about the activities the division is doing to try to work toward improving the experience and the quality of behavioral health services that are available to DVD members. A couple of those initiatives continue to be moving along, and they're actually very active, and I wanted to give you updates on those. The initiative that we call Do a Diagnosis, it is for DDD members who have a co-occurring behavioral health diagnosis with complex needs. The division has continued to move forward in providing education and support to the behavioral health agencies that provide care to DDD members. The goal it has been to increase the capacity of the behavioral health providers to better understand working with people with IDD. The division did expand the training curriculum that is available on RELIAS, which is the training platform that the behavioral health providers throughout the state of Arizona uses to train their direct support staff as well as their professional staff. It's their learning management system. We were able to purchase a specific catalog of classes that are available in supporting people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We've added over 100 courses to that library that is available for all of those agencies to access now. In the work that we're doing to roll out a financial incentive to the behavioral health agencies throughout the state to incentivize them having their staff take specific classes, we developed and identified 12 courses that are available through that RELIAS library that if a vendor can get their staff, 10% of their staff to complete those 12 courses, then that vendor agency will have a financial incentive through the division. We know that from the time we started tracking, we've had 1,200 behavioral health professionals take at least one of the courses, and over 6,000 of the courses have been completed since we implemented the project. We continue to encourage and work with our DDD health plans to encourage the vendor community to take advantage of those opportunities and to get those staff trained. This committee is also rolling out 2 in-person conferences this year. One around May in Tucson, one around September in Phoenix. They are bringing in local as well as national experts to help provide breakout sessions and training to behavioral health professionals, and are working to have those conference hours count toward continuing education credit to encourage people to come. We know it's not the answer, but we know we're trying to move toward where we need to get. We need to raise the minimum, raise the platform, and continue to improve opportunities for quality service. The other rollout that has started is the training on positive behavior support. The division has completed its curriculum. Through input from lots of other states and agencies and DDD staff and external stakeholders. We've created a survey for people who take the training to help give us feedback so that we can analyze the quality. We've also implemented a pre and post assessment so we can get a baseline of knowledge of direct support professionals who will be taking the class, and then the knowledge base hopefully demonstrating an increase after they've taken the class. We are also working with, go ahead, Linda. You're on mute, my friend.
What is, I know that you said it was for positive behavior support, PBS, but what is that? That's not the one that we brought up a couple years ago with the, whatever happened with that? I know that's not what you're talking about, but whatever happened with that? Or is it, did it just go by the wayside, I hope, but don't know? The sex ed, basically.
Oh, that's a whole different ball game.
Okay. The positive behavior is the one that I worked with you on.
Positive behavior support is the one that we've been, yes. And we did a national search at an Arizona search. We found existing curriculum and found that we had kind of set a rubric of what we wanted to see addressed in the curriculum, and it wasn't really in any one curriculum, so we developed our own. The training, I don't have it in front of me, but I know that it talks about history, it talks about understanding behavior, it talks about trauma-informed supports right. for helping people. It talks about the ACEs, the assessment for childhood trauma and how that impacts people's ability to learn and their behavior. It talks about strategies around supporting people for positive behavioral outcomes. It is a full 8 hours long.
Wow.
A very full day for people Excellent. Who are trying to fit it in a day. And our other scoring mechanism that we're using is we have identified some and continue to identify vendors who would work with us that when you review behavior plans for folks at program review committee, you get a report on each individual member and the number of target behaviors, meaning the behavior we're trying to teach another way. For that member, the number of target behaviors that occur over the period of a year. And what we're doing is working with agencies who are sharing with us their data through program review committee that we're tracking for all of the members that are supported by the agency, the current count of target behaviors, and then 6 months later, after people have been trained, to compare the amount of target behaviors, because we expect to see that number to go down because we are implementing strategies to help staff have a better relationship and better outcomes. We know it's never going to completely go away.
We hope so, right?
But that's the hope, is where we're going with this, to demonstrate its success. We have started rolling out the train the trainers, so qualified vendors who are going to offer this training to their direct support professionals. Their training staff are required to come in and do a 2-day training with the division and to be able to demonstrate competence on the training material before we are issuing them the curriculum, the participant guide, the trainer guide, the assessments. So that we're running it very much like we do Article 9 in order to build consistency around who's delivering that training. So we've rolling out the train the trainers. We set an announcement right before Christmas, not the best timing in the world, to let vendors know the train the trainer was starting mid-January. But within 2 business days, we had over 135 vendors respond and sign up, which is really exciting. And over the last 2 weeks, we've now had almost 300 qualified vendors sign up to get their trainers trained in this curriculum, with the ultimate goal is they will then go back once we know that they know what they're doing and train the direct support professionals. And hopefully we will get lots and lots and lots of folks trained. We've also worked with Raising Special Kids, and they have trainers who will be providing that training to family members, caregivers, interested parties of the independent oversight committees are welcome to take the training from them to be able to see its content. And they are finalizing their announcements about their schedule that they're going to roll out the training. And for every direct support professional that is employed by DDD directly to support members in our state operated group homes, intermediate care facilities, it is mandated that all of those staff take the training. And we have a rollout plan that is supported through our state op program. I saw Dee and Linda, go ahead.
So is this the one that we looked at like maybe August or September where it had the negative?
It's been removed.
Right, right.
Yes.
But
yes.
More as a we don't, okay. You yes. guys, this is excellent what she's talking about, because I don't know if I saw the final, but I saw what they were, and it's excellent. It was very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. I'm excited to roll it out. I'm excited to get feedback. And I'm even more excited to see the quality of life for DDD members and relationships between families and their family members and direct support professionals and the members they support improve as a result of all of this. So that's where we're at on that. Zane also shared with the group that the legislative session is now back in session. that the division continues to watch and monitor any proposed legislation that would have an impact on the DDD program. And as always, anything that is passed and signed by the governor that is going into law, the division will absolutely work toward implementing and complying with any new requirements. Just to keep you informed, we know that this year there continues to be legislation proposed to add spina bifida as a qualifying diagnosis to be eligible for the Division of Developmental Disabilities, as well as adding Prader-Willi syndrome to be in amongst itself a qualifying diagnosis. We know that some have passed committee, but we don't know that they're going to be passed or placed into law. But it's something that we are monitoring and watching.
Leah, do they still have to meet the cognitive criteria?
What they would have to meet, Linda, if Prader-Willi syndrome or spina bifida become qualifying diagnoses, what they have to meet is have that diagnosis, and they need to have 3 of the 7 functional limitations. But it doesn't have to have a corresponding intellectual disability. Does that help?
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody, any questions for me? I encourage anyone interested, please take advantage of the training and watch for announcements around that. So thank you.
Thank you, Leah. It's been a pleasure working with you.
Actually, it's been an absolute honor, Linda. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle. We got the health plans.
Yes, we have Ian present from United Healthcare.
Yep. Thanks, Michelle. Yeah, Ian Wilson here from United Healthcare Community Plan. Again, just a member advocate here. No updates from United Healthcare, but I will be happy to take any questions.
I don't think we do at this time. Thanks, Ian.
Thank you, Linda.
I hope the meeting's been beneficial for you.
You know, it always is. There's always something new, and then it's great for me, especially being new here at United Healthcare, to get good perspective on the community that we support. So I really do appreciate it.
Thank you. Go ahead, Michelle.
And we also have Vera from Mercy Care.
Hi. No updates from Mercy Care.
Thank you, Vera. Hope you enjoyed the meeting so far. Go ahead, Michelle. Sorry.
I'm not sure. I know Larry provided some input earlier. I didn't know if Larry had anything else he wanted to provide to the committee.
No, at this point, that was my only update for the group. My only comment would be that, Linda, thank you so much for everything. You're a beautiful person inside and out, and I'm going to miss my favorite chair. Don't tell Dee that.
You wait to say that when she gets off, right? But it is on the record now, so come on.
It is public record. You are correct.
Well, I'll miss you guys too.
If you ever need anything from me, please reach out.
You know I will. I appreciate that. Thank you, Larry. You've been a great help to me too. Michelle, making me blush. At least you're not making me cry like the other night, right?
Right.
Yeah. For us,
Frederica. How about Frederica?
Oh, okay.
Hello, Linda. I don't have any updates from Access, but like Larry just said, you are for DDD my favorite chair, so we are going to miss you. And I think I put those same sentiments in the little card thing we did for you. So congratulations on your retirement, and I hope you enjoy travel.
Well, we got to get retirement taken care of first. This was, I'll just tell you guys, this was a total surprise. I mean, we knew it was coming, but I didn't know it was coming that day, you know? And he comes in and goes, okay, I retired. I'm like, what? I mean, we have discussed this? I mean, come on. Anyway, he's like, nope. Saw the direction of the company and talked to my supervisor, and I got a, you know, a couple months PTO. And so here we are. I'm like, we got to get Medicare, Dennis. We got to. What about your pension? What about
all these things, right? Well, congratulations anyway.
It was crazy. I appreciate that. Thank you. one thing I do have a question for you, and I thought about this in the night. I thought from our October meeting, because we didn't meet November, December. We were in a statewide, and I'll write this out, and whoever's chair, I hope you'll follow up on this, and maybe you can help her. But in our statewide, we were talking about oversight, and the IOCs at one point, a district central, had oversight over the ICFs. And the reason that we did, and in fact, with that oversight, and it was a request from Access because they needed to dot an I, cross a T. And with that request, we also got a member, a non-voting member on our committee, Marlene Riggs, who worked at the ICF. So she became a member of our committee. So it was someone from the ICF needed to be on the IOC. Here we go with those acronyms again, right, ladies? And IOC would go visit the ICFs like quarterly. And that was to have eyes and ears for Access. So, and maybe Jamie Snyder, I think Jamie Snyder was the one who was Access. Lisa, you were on board. Do you have something to add to that?
I don't know if this is when I remember going to the ICFs just to become familiar with them. We believe we went to two in Phoenix, and I can't remember exactly, but I do remember this coming up a couple of years ago where the IOC used to visit ICFs quarterly, but I thought that somebody confirmed that it was actually through the ARC of Arizona.
No. Okay. It was an Access requirement. Okay. It was an Access requirement. And I didn't call Carol, and Karen's not here. So, you know.
Yeah, I remember Carol saying that it was actually through the ARC, but
No, it was Access. It was Access. And so that, and if you want, I'll write that out and send it to you for your, so you can do some research on it. But the only reason that DDD, I think, would, and it's not giving us permission to go in, but, and I don't know the right words, but, you know, for us to have an oversight over a home like that would have to be something big like Access, not the ARC. Don't you think, Leah? Don't you think? Just nod your head. Yeah.
Well, Linda, I think we need to go back and review some things. But first, I want you to know that the member that the DDD representative that joined the IOC that represented the DDD state operated intermediate care facilities was the supervisor over the QIDPs, which are the qualified intellectual disability professionals, who are the caseworkers for people who reside in an ICF. I'm no longer really connected to that group right now, but I do know that it was important to the division to make sure that those district central ICFs were tied to the IOC. I don't personally remember it being a mandate from Access. And I don't know what's happened with, I don't know if maybe she retired and maybe there's new leadership or, but it's something that as a committee, you can certainly ask us to look into and see about getting a representative, because you do see incident reports related to those.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Okay.
And deaths. But
all of the reports, yes.
Right. I shouldn't say. Anyway. The thing is that particular individual, and I already said her name, but anyway, she moved out of the ICFs. My understand, she got transferred because the criteria for that position changed, that they had to have nursing credentials. So my understanding at the time that it was Access requirement, maybe it was part of the notice to cure because it was that long ago. I don't know, but maybe Frederica can do some research for us on that. And if you want, like I said, Frederica, after this meeting, I promise I'll type it out and get it to you like I said I would 3 months ago. So
if you could, just because that's before my time. So, you know, I wouldn't know where to begin with even explaining the ask. So if you could get that in writing and send it over, then I can get that to the correct people on this side so that you guys
can know what. Excuse me, but Dee also knows how to reach out to Jamie and
Jamie Snyder.
Snyder, yeah.
She's not here anymore.
Oh, I know. I know not. But Dee knows how to reach her. I've got her contact. So maybe we can reach out to her too and see if she remembers that that particular situation. We're all kind of vague on it. I know that, but that just came up in a statewide as far as, and I made the comment, you know, IOC and oversight over the ICFs and, you know, anyway, I'm like, I don't know what the rule was. I just know we did it. So anyway, they tell us to go and we do, you know, whatever. So I will get that to you this afternoon. Okay.
Okay.
And in the meantime, I'll do my research and we can maybe communicate and keep in, you know, the loop, whoever the new chair is. Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. Am I still okay to do that, everybody, if I'm not a member? I'm not getting any personal information, just following up, right? Okay. All right. We did anything else, Frederica, from you?
No, that was it. Thank you.
Thank you for always being here. And I like that I'm your favorite. Okay. Anyway, go ahead, Michelle. Sorry. They're all just saying that because I'm leaving. You guys know that, right?
That's really true for me anyways.
Thanks. Go ahead, Michelle. Sorry.
Oh, I believe that's all of the updates. Oh, wait. I have a little update. I'm sorry. So we'd want to start as liaisons. We want to start providing you with some of your own data. We always put it in the meeting minutes, but we thought, well, we're going to go ahead and provide it in the meeting themselves as well. So for December, the incident reports that were provided to the committee members loaded to the share drive was a total of 593 incident reports in December. 58 were open and 508 were closed incident reports. And then also for the month of December, we sent 21 questions to the district quality unit for follow-up on those incident reports that were reviewed. We also want to let you know, let the committee know that additionally, our unit is working on a backlog of incidents that have yet to be provided to the IOC from 2023. There are some incidents from October that are yet to be provided. They're currently in the redaction phase, and we will get those out to you. Hopefully, by the end of this month, we should have that completed. For the next DDD IOC statewide chairs meeting, that has been scheduled. That meeting is scheduled for April 25th. It is a 5:30 p.m. meeting. And if you would like an invitation to that meeting to go on your calendar, let me know and I'll go ahead and get that sent out to you. That's it. That's pretty much it for our update for today. Oh, you're on mute.
Hello, can you hear me?
Mr. Delgado, we've already had call to the public. I'm sorry, but you're not recognized. Thank you.
Wait a minute. When did I come out? In the beginning or at the end? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that right.
Comes at the beginning. Michelle, you need, please mute him. Thank you.
Well, wait a minute. May I make a comment, though?
No. We already had call to the public, and you were not on at that time. We're in the middle of a meeting. We're almost through. And if you would like to make comments in our meeting, they come right at the beginning of the meeting, and you are limited to 3 minutes. So I'm sorry, but we're following the open meeting law, and those are the protocols put in by the open meeting law. We're checked by the Auditor General, and if we don't follow them, we get dinged. So I'm sorry, but... you are not recognized. Thank you. Let's see. Okay. Oh, with regards to... Shoot, I forgot. Okay, never mind. Let's go to the elections. We need nominees. As y'all know, I'm retiring, and so I need, do we have nominations? Can I make a nomination, Larry, as the chair? Am I allowed to?
I don't see why not.
I would like to nominate Lisa for the chair. Do I have a second on that?
This is Carolyn. I second that.
Okay. Is there a discussion? Lisa, you're on mute. If you want to say something, you're on mute. You're on mute.
I was just wondering if I had a say. Just kidding. No.
No, you don't. We'll vote, and then you really won't have a say. No. Go ahead. What do you want to say?
No, that's it. It was a joke.
I'm here for you if you get it. Okay. So let's vote. If there's no discussion on Lisa, let's have a vote. Carolyn?
Aye.
Eva?
Aye.
Debbie? Is Debbie on? She is. Debbie, you're on mute. I vote aye. Lisa, you can vote for yourself.
Did you say I can? Okay. I will do my best.
Debbie? She has trouble with that phone. Well, we've got four. Is that, that's good, right? Larry, Michelle, we're good, right? Okay. All right, so Lisa, congratulations. You are our new chair. Do you want me to finish out the meeting or do you want to take over?
No, I'd like you to finish up the meeting so that I know what to do.
We need a vice chair. Does anyone want to? Eva. You're on mute, Eva.
Oh, yeah. I do not want to be vice chair. I went looking through my minutes and I have something for Frederica about that issue. I found it in the minutes in the year.
Oh, good. So tell us. Can we finish up the elections? And then do you mind, Frederica, if we go back to that in a sec?
No, it's fine.
And okay. Carolyn has her hand up as well.
Carolyn? Carolyn, you're on mute.
Sorry, that was a mistake.
What, the vote or the mute? Yeah. Oh, you don't have. Okay, all right. Do we have a nominee for vice chair? Lisa, do you have anybody you'd like to work with?
I mean, I think Eva has so much information, and I think I can. But if she doesn't want to do it, you know, we
then you can still collaborate without the title, right, Eva? So your husband will be satisfied.
I thought maybe we could make Mandy vice chair.
Well, Mandy's not.
She's not here to accept that. I'm sorry, but my husband said no. So I don't want to have anything to do with title. I will be a community member because she's retired, and I want you to know my husband's retired, and we are traveling, and so you know, it's like, do I want to be another Eduardo?
Eduardo,
be out of here. Eduardo,
I don't get.
Well, she was also, she was like 80.
Oh,
yeah, you know, is that something I would want to do?
As long as you have Becky, yes. You have to be it. Sounds like Rebecca, if nobody else. Okay.
But there's no way I have anything to do. You know, I will be a committee member. I will read closed IRs. I said, you know, 500 closed IRs.
And Pika, you can emails about all of your questions before the meetings, and I can help narrow them down and get them on the agenda and different things like that.
Because the committee's so small, Lisa, how do you feel about just being chair and work? You know, Larry and Michelle, we all kind of work together anyway. And the committee is small. And, you know, Carolyn's getting ready to head to England to, and our condolences, Carolyn, again, for your mom. You know, she's trying to make the funeral arrangements for her mother and, you know.
I mean, if I'm committed to being chair, then I'm committed to actually being a part and participating every month and doing what I need to do and attending the statewides and developing relationships with the other members who I don't know very well and I haven't been a part of. The DD and employees, etc. James, I knew in person. So, I mean, he's the only one that I've ever met in person, aside from maybe Leah, maybe one time. But, you know, I will do what I can and I'll do the best that I'm able to, okay? It's going to be a learning curve for me. But I know that I have Linda and I have my Aunt Carol too, just for the, like how to even do a motion, you know? and then of course I know I'll have
to go on the internet to see how to do that.
Morgan, I'm guessing will be taking Michelle's place, correct? So maybe you know, I can meet with Morgan on a separate meeting time to kind of go over the flow of how the IOC meetings will unveil or be managed from here on.
And Lisa, like you said, I'm not going anywhere for a while. We've got a lot of loose ends to tie up. And so I'm here. I can certainly let you know how I did things. You can pick and choose what you want to do. But, you know, like getting the agenda items, you know, requesting from the committee, getting it to Michelle, sending everything to Larry because he's our go-to guy. And he has been a lifesaver for me. Thank you, Larry. I mean, and I truly do mean that. He's been my shoulder. I've cried. I've commiserated. He's cheered me on. It's just, I'm sorry. I am going to miss you, okay? I really am.
Who knows? I come back a few months after you realize that, wow, I have time to do things. I heard of other things. But what I would love to have, if it's at all possible, and I know if this is the appropriate time or place, but everybody in this meeting here that associated with DDD, I would love to have a one-on-one, maybe Zoom meeting with you to really get to understand what your role is and further understand how you support the IOC and in what areas, because there's so many of you. And I mean, I know some generally, but I don't know the details that I need to be able to be as efficient and to be able to do my best. So maybe I could send an email out to you all and come up with like just a 15-minute Zoom or Google Meet where in the next 2 weeks we can meet one-on-one. That would be really appreciative of me, or I would be very appreciative of it. And Linda, you'll be back every once in a while.
Hello, goodbye. No. No, I will. I'm here. I only want success for you guys. So, you know, we've all had too much invested in this and continue to have with our hearts for the members. And so, you know, any question you have, any help you need, I will be there. And Dee also wrote in the chat that she will become your new BFF. When you get back up into town, the three of us can go to lunch. You're going to love her. Okay.
I'll be back in 2 weeks.
Perfect.
For a little bit.
Maybe we'll even take a little drive to Tucson. Who knows?
I'll be in Phoenix too.
All right. There you go. All right. Do we need to go into?
Yeah. Don't forget me.
Oh, yeah. Eva. That's right. For Frederica. This is where it all stems from, Frederica. And Eva, I mean, she's like the guru. She's better than a tape recorder. So go for it, Eva.
Yes. So February the 26th of 2018, Leah Gibbs came to our committee.
Uh-oh, Leah, you're on.
I knew she was in charge. Anyway, this is what my note says. CMS was unhappy with Coolidge and the government board oversight, client protection after IRs, three was active treatments, ICF across the state, 10 facilities. And then the required category requirement for HRC was annual training for Article 9, parent guardian of someone in ICF, which was Eduardo.
Eduardo.
Staff ATPC non-voting, which was Marlene, and tour ICS. And we actually voted on that with Heidi, was made the motion, Carol seconded, and we supported Leah's three parts was approved.
Look at Leah's face.
She don't remember it, but I remember her.
I'm sorry, Eva. I have to apologize. Lord knows I'm getting old.
Leah, it's okay. None of us remembered that. And it's just so funny to see your face.
I'm just trying to remember it all, and I don't.
I know. Don't. You were just the messenger. You were the messenger. That's all. So.
It says here you had a new position as community outreach.
That would be a true statement at that time in 2018.
And that's how you got stuck with us in doing that.
Oh, don't say stuck. I don't ever feel stuck.
We love you, Leah.
I'm sorry. But anyway, somewhere along the line, there are minutes in the archives someplace that will record it in that meeting.
Frederica, it came from CMS, which is Altex Access, right? I mean, how do we follow up on that? Is that still something we need to do? Or Eva, send me those notes, okay? Lisa, do you want me to do this or do you want to? I'm sorry. I'm acting like I'm chair now.
Say what it is that you want.
Do you want me to do this or do you want to do it or
notes?
Forward it on to Frederica.
Yeah. But Eva, why don't you send it to me and Linda, and then I'll forward it on to Frederica.
There you go. Perfect. You're on mute, Eva.
These were just handwritten notes.
We'll type them up. Take a picture. Send it to us. We'll type them up.
Okay.
Scan them in.
Okay. And then send me and send it to me via, and I'll type up the notes if I can read them, and then call you if I have questions.
Because Lisa, you were on, so you remember all this. Leah?
That's when I was working a ton, so I may not have been there during that meeting.
True. Go ahead, Leah.
I just want to ask if you could please also copy them through Morgan or Michelle so they can get to me and give us an opportunity to go back through our old meeting minutes to see if we can't locate minutes from that meeting.
You're on mute, Eva.
So I have who was there.
And Lisa, that doesn't matter. We just need to know.
But Lisa was not on. That's why she doesn't remember it.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, Linda, you were there.
Yeah, I remember it. I just didn't remember the details because I didn't have to. So. That was Karen's job. Okay, so Frederica, we're good, right? Leah, we're all good. We'll figure out what we're talking about, and then Lisa can get that to you guys.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Okay. And Lisa's going to become your new favorite chair.
Great.
Okay. All right. Do we need to go into executive? We've got about 9 minutes, ladies, so it's got to be quick. Eva, you're on mute.
Well, the thing of it is, I asked the questions, so I don't know if James wants to answer those questions, but I put them in the comments section, and so
I did get them, Eva, but I've been out sick since Thursday before last, so I just got back. I have not had a chance to get them answered yet.
Okay.
Why don't you give him a chance to get them answered, see if that's appropriate, and then go into, if it's not, then do further discussion. What do you think?
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, you know, right now they've been doing pretty good. I did have one where we had an IR when he was an inpatient facility, and I don't know how that was going to work out. And I don't think I even had that written, what that was. So anyway, I just did my comments. So, oh, I did have that one about the death. Are we going to talk about the death?
Okay. Is there a motion to go into executive quickly? I need a motion quickly.
I make a motion, we go into executive.
Is there a second?
I second.
Okay, I would like to thank everybody from the bottom of my heart from being here, for the help that you have been to me as we have traveled this long road together. I love each and every one of you. You've been great. I've loved working with you, and I will miss you. And I'm an email away. You all have it. It's the same, has been since email started, so. Take care. I love you all. It's been great. Thanks.
Thanks, Linda.
Thanks, enjoy. Linda.
Thank you. Okay. For the committee, Michelle put the link in there. So let's...
The link is in the chat. It's a live link. If you click on it, it should take you right to it. Just make sure you please mute yourself in this meeting before you go to executive.
You can mute everybody, right, Michelle? So we're all muted then.
Yeah, okay. I'll look at that and see. You, okay. Yes.
And we're back. We have to unmute again.
There we go. Okay. Debbie. Is Debbie here yet? Oh, she has to hang up and call in.
We're going to miss you so much, Linda.
Pardon me?
We're going to miss you so much.
Aw. We can all go to lunch now. We don't have to have a meeting.
I know. We'll have to, yeah, well, we have to. David actually reached out to me and wanted me to make sure to say that we should need to get lunch.
Well, I can come into Phoenix. I'm free.
I'm gonna have you give me a few days because I'm still recovering from. I got very sick this last. I was like sick for like 10 days.
I wish I would have known. I would have sent you some cough syrup.
I had plenty of that. I've been in a daze for like the last 10 days.
I was drinking that stuff. Karen would just say, "Linda, just go get Jägermeister." Yeah. I tried that. That didn't work.
Get the middleman.
Robitussin nighttime works the best. Okay, we have Debbie, we have Lisa. Okay, we've got everybody. Debbie, you've got the floor.
Linda told me I had to do this. I wanted to just fade away. I joined the Youth and Blood Human Rights Committee in 2013 to join and be with Linda, get reacquainted with Linda, plus learn about the DD world. I have learned a lot. I've learned to appreciate all of you members, love you, appreciate your service. But my life has gotten to the point with my daughter's cancer, my husband just had another knee replacement. My life is so hectic right now that I have decided as long as Linda was retiring, I will retire with her. So goodbye, everyone.
I mean, it's been such a pleasure having you on the committee, and we're going to miss you so much, too.
I was wondering why we were voting for a vice chair, and it's your meeting, so I didn't say anything. Oh, I'm sorry, Debbie. We're going to miss you.
Well, thank you for everything, that. Debbie.
She hadn't made the
official... I kept hoping the older I got, the less complicated my life would get, and it got worse.
Yes, we're going to miss you, Debbie.
Driving to Phoenix and seeing everyone in person. I told Linda I hated doing stuff. But anyway, I'll miss you and good luck in the future.
So Debbie and I are going to go for celebratory blizzards next. She just lives down the street and we're so... We are awesome.
Yeah, well, as long as we don't keep meeting at funerals, we need to stop doing that.
That's a good idea. We'll meet at what's downtown? What's the restaurant down there? We used to go to the Mexican food. Remember when we met at the 4000 building? We'd go across the street and have lunch, and we didn't have open meeting law, and we didn't have Larry and Michelle telling us we could or couldn't.
They closed Garcia's, didn't they? That used to be the place you guys used to go with Garcia's, but they closed an apartment building across the street. Yeah.
I thought it was Macayo's.
Yeah, it was Macayo's.
Back in the day when we didn't have bosses and we didn't have rules, and our meetings went till 4 o'clock. We were all BFFs, remember?
We were told we couldn't have meetings.
Oh, yeah.
We were told we couldn't have meetings for a while, and we met at a couple of Chinese food restaurants.
Yeah, we always went to lunch. We had our meetings. We just went to lunch and had our meetings. BDD's not going to tell us we can't meet. We're going to meet. Anyway, so it's been a fun ride.
I love you all. I'll miss you.
We will miss you, and it's been fun, and we're a phone call, email, text message away. Love you all. It's been a pleasure and honor, and keep up the good work.
Have fun.
This meeting is adjourned.
Linda, thank you.
Okay.
Oh, we have to vote.
No, we don't have to vote, do we, Michelle? Larry said we don't have to vote to adjourn the meeting.
Doctor.
Hi.
I have to vote the doctor. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.